CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to the Futurology Show with B1 and B2. Hello, Brett.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, and you?
Yeah, I'm back.
Good. Yo, that was loud. I'm
just gonna Sorry. Hi, I'm back.
Hey, man, you were in Cape Town.
I was, bro. Like this, bro. Yeah, no, I should have slowed down a bit. Also, it's November. Can you believe it's like we got one more week left of November?
Bro, where has this year gone? Don't know about one more week left. I mean, it's I can actually remember like the July winter blues, and you know, and now we're talking summer.
It's ridiculous.
Women have started shaving their legs. We're seeing
skirts. Yeah. Sundresses. Nice.
That's a good time of the year.
Excellent. But yeah, I mean, it was windy in Cape Town, so if the wind has got anything to do with how fast time flies, then I can imagine why we're here already. It's insane.
I don't know. No. It's like nuts. Maybe it's just I'm getting old, so I'm noticing that my days are getting numb.
Everything's ticking through.
I actually came across an app. No, it's not my app of the week, but I came across an app like your death clock.
Yeah.
You put your information in, your demographics, where you live, male.
Morbid. Lovely.
And you can actually watch a countdown. The scary thing is over 1 million downloads. I mean, so there's a lot of people that want to know when they're going to die. Come here. Actually, start with me and I'll kill you.
Because the Unix clock told me I was going to die.
I can't come into work tomorrow. I'm going to die. Cool.
Awesome.
So talking of apps, app of the week, you're a Mac user.
Yes.
You're an iPhone user.
Yes.
This is a very selfish, self-indulged app for you and me and all others like us, which are a lot of people in the station.
Yeah.
It's called Walter 2. It's
Walter.
Yeah, W-A-L-T-R, so there's no E, and the number 2. And very simply, what Walter 2 does, when you watch the video, it's on the website, you actually use the web, you can transfer stuff to your iPhone without iTunes. You can put music into your library.
You can put
documents. It's legal. It's 100%
legal. Is it really?
It works. He actually says, there's a guy in there, I think his name is Josh, and he goes, it's magic. You know, and like the whole video, like, you know, the promo video? But I shit you not, it is magic. I've tried it. You can take a ringtone. So let's just stop on the ringtones, okay?
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to make a personalized ringtone iPhone?
I've had the same ringtone on every phone for the last 10 years.
Because there's a reason for it.
Yes.
Because it's a ball breaker. Okay, on an iPhone, it's a nightmare. For anyone that's actually out there that's tried it, they know exactly what we're talking about. You can now create a ringtone or have a ringtone,
M4R.
And you just alter it to your phone and it puts itself into ringtones.
Awesome.
It's there.
Yeah.
I think it was about a $30, $40, $50 app. I can't actually remember.
$39.95.
There we go. So yeah. $40. It sounds like a lot.
I'm doing the user journey now. I'm literally looking at this. This is amazeballs.
It really is. As I said, for an Apple, you know, everyone that has a go at Apple people, it's all about that ecosystem. You know, it's like you're locked into the ecosystem, and the next thing that comes in their mouth is how iTunes sucks. Let's be honest, iTunes does suck. It's not the best interface out there. So Walter 2, I don't know what happened to Walter 1.
You can put MKV, AVI files, you can move everything across
everything.
There.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So you can actually, take your industry. You're always working with content. You want to show a client, you now have to go to iTunes, load it up, put it across, show it in quick time.
We've gotten pretty good at it because we've had to.
Sure. Just drag it into Walter and boom, it'll be on your phone and you watch it.
That is great.
Done. So I was...
Thank you, Brett. This is going to change things.
That's what I'm saying. For an Apple-involved or Apple-locked-in person, this is quite exciting stuff.
Nice.
So I was...
Yes, that's getting tweeted right now.
I was quite excited about that. So before I carry on with any of my weird and wonderfuls, and we were talking and mocking Cape Town. We've got to do it. Cape Town. The
Schwabra. That's right. No, it's more Durban. I can't get it out of me, bro. You can take me out of Durban.
I was going to say, for international listeners, so there's like this East Coast, West Coast thing in South Africa.
Yeah.
In fact, there's actually the East Coast, Central, and the West Coast thing. We all just hate the West. It's simple.
It completely blew my brain, though, when I was in Cape Town. Like, you know it's always going to be the case, but how light it is all the time, like, it just shows you that time is actually not a real thing.
Well, that's why they're so slow. They've got all the time in the world.
Everything happens so, it's amazing. I digress. That's a whole nother. We really should do a discussion about the future of time, because we've been working in agile workflows and we're trying to see how these sprints and all these kinds of things work. And we started looking into the opportunity of adopting a 6-day work cycle.
A 6-day? Oh, that's
doing away with Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, trying to sort of dispel the psychological, oh my goodness, it's Monday.
Yeah.
Rather, it's day 4 of the cycle, or it's day. And just see it, but another thing is just time. So maybe it's the philosopher in me just really getting frustrated at the end of a year, but the fact that it's the end of the year, why should anything change?
Well,
because we're going to, I mean, there's nothing.
It's human nature.
There's nothing really between December 31 and January 1st. And all of a sudden we've got this New Year's resolution and these gung-ho attitude. And all of a sudden, like, yeah, we've got more energy going into the year. And it's just, it's more of a state of mind than anything else. So, yeah, if anybody's listening, you really want to get involved in the discussion around the future of time and workflow optimization and what we can do with better use of our time. Give us a tweet. Let us know.
Yeah, that would be a good show.
I think it'd be a good show.
Time is.
We need to ask for more time, though.
Have you got time for us? So why were you in Cape Town, Brett? What were you doing down there?
A number of things. It's the end of the year, so it was time to go and catch up with some clients. And also, it was AfricaCom was happening, so I went down to AfricaCom. For those of you that don't know, it's been working for about 19 years. It's been going, and it's the largest Africa-focused tech event on the continent. So all the infrastructure, telcos, MVNOs, some of the handset guys are all there networking and doing keynotes and stuff. But it happens over a week in Cape Town over CTICC. And for the second year, I think this year, was the TV Connect as well. So obviously it was something that we go through and do. And they say it's the best and brightest from across the African broadcast, telecommunications, and content. TV Connect Africa will address practice and multi-screen. And that was a big thing, multi-screen, finally. I mean, I was there at AfricaCom 3 years ago before TV Connect, or 4 years ago now, before TV Connect was even a thing.
See how you're thinking.
Yeah.
4 years.
Yeah. Before TV Connect was really here, we were there at AfricaCom talking about how content is actually what people engage with, not data, and trying to get this idea that great content helps push data. And this multi-screen society, the idea that the biggest screen in the house doesn't necessarily attract the most attention.
That's true now, hey?
Yeah, it is. But back then it was like, what is this crazy kid on stage talking about?
Yeah.
Now there's this huge, oh shit.
Told you so.
Yeah, we were told. Now it is that we told you so, but it's a catch-up game of how do we adopt this? How do we as telcos and brands actually make sure that we can create access to this content? So it's really, really cool. The nice thing about it is that it really is a great sort of melting pot for ideas and great place for everybody to network and share what we're doing in this space. So it is really great. I'm looking forward to seeing the event grow over the years. And just some of the opportunities that come out of it. There were some great sponsors there. Facebook were there. So I was invited to the Facebook Start event.
They're in the news, not for the right reasons necessarily. So what was the Facebook?
I think at a certain point you kind of get in the news for the good and the bad all at the same time. I mean, yeah. We were at Cliff Central. I think we're victim one.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were talking about the tools, and they've really put a good focus, not just in South Africa or Cape Town or anything, but they've gone to a number of cities across the globe, and they've started this campaign called FB Start, which is Facebook Start, to build better apps. It's a great opportunity where you actually get to meet the Facebook team. So there are guys from all over the world and from the Facebook head office, and they all come out and you get to learn about the Facebook platform, what you can do with it. There are great new tools that we can use. There's great new developers, some best practice about what things we should be looking at as development houses and innovative partners. But yeah, it was really cool. It was a 4-hour event that we spent, great networking opportunity. And they talk about how to build, grow, monetize. I mean, they've got Facebook Live now. They've become a CDN. They've taken on over the years. I mean, you see there's more video posts in your newsfeed now on Facebook than ever before. With the rumors of YouTube now saying we're going to take away monetization, everybody's getting a bit itchy. I don't think it's really going to happen to the extent that everybody's worried about it happening. But it was really nice to have Facebook come into the country and say, look, we actually care about the engineers and the developers and the guys coming up with great ideas here. We want to help enable you. But you don't have to bump your head against it all the time. Don't learn the hard way. Let's help you out with it. So they've created developer communities. They're talking about React Native, where basically trying to standardize the coding language and platforms that we use. So whether you're a full stack or a PHP or an HTML5 or JavaScript, they're saying, look, let's use JavaScript. Let's use React Native.
Why would that be at AfricaCom? Where does that all tie in?
It is about communication. So it's about pushing the thing. And because they have – so AfricaCom is about the comms side of it. Everybody's using devices and infrastructure to interact. It's not necessarily GSM cellular phone calls anymore. It's about how do we get data?
Yeah.
How do we stay connected? And once we're connected, what do we have access to? So it really does look at the entire end-to-end spectrum of telco providers, infrastructure partners, platform owners, platform developers, software developers, content creators, all the way through to, there's not so much of an end user focus, but it's about how we can enable the industry to cater for, you know, consumers and the end user space. So it's really, really great. Nice thing that Facebook are giving a shit about emerging markets. They're actually coming in and saying, hey.
I think they've realized that's where the next billion.
Well, it's always the thing. I mean, it's an Africa-focused event, so they're talking about emerging markets, but they're saying, look, we understand that we don't understand necessarily what you do. You here, as developers in the emerging market, in the Africa space, we want to work with you to understand more about what you need so we can help give it to you.
The only problem, though, is they want to work with us to help us to understand, but they're going to charge us in dollars. That's the first thing they have to understand.
Most of the stuff that they're putting through, and they've opened it up. It's free. You can go do a community development program, and you can get involved in circles, developer circles, and all these things. And I spoke to Sebastian. He's one of the local South African representative for Facebook. He's happy to come join us on the show next year. So we'll get some. The nice thing is we have a touch point.
Yeah.
And they're getting involved. They're going to scale up over time. Obviously, they're very big in the sort of lean startup. They're still a very big business, but they don't need a huge amount of resources in order to do these. And they're relying on, you know, crowdsourced opportunity with developers actually getting together. But I think focus is key. And it was just really nice to get involved. You don't actually know how much Facebook you use, but from an authentication security perspective, anybody that builds native apps on mobile devices, you might get the opportunity to say, well, just sign in with Facebook. How many times have you downloaded an app and just say, I'll just sign up with Facebook because I know that that's one place. I don't need to remember passwords. And for some reason, we're trusting Facebook. For some reason, there's a trust level. But what they're doing is we've got to know what they're doing because they're doing it. And they are allowing login with Facebook, the centralized thing. So
we used to have that. Remember, it was called a Fangate. And then they took it away.
We know about it.
Yeah,
the millions out there.
Yeah, it's just that I have problems with these companies that I keep changing things because as a developer, it makes it difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad you got benefit from it.
Yeah, so one of the things they're saying is because we got dropped in the shit big time with one of the first apps we did that used a Facebook login, and I've told them about it, and they were like, yeah, this new initiative that they're doing, this FB Start, is to try and help people stay abreast of the changes before they happen so we can be more proactive and less reactive with changes to the Facebook platform. But yeah, so that was interesting. That was one of the things we did, obviously meeting and greeting and networking around Cape Town.
Drinking.
There was a couple of beers. and it was nice. But yes, the wind was insane. I wasn't even ready. There was one point where the car actually like changed lanes and we didn't even try. we're in this lane now. All right. But yeah, it was great to see the guys in Cape Town. And I'll be back again before the end of the year.
All right, cool.
But it's nice to see that it's such a beautiful city. It's really cool.
Yeah, look, you know, we all knock it, we tear it to pieces, but at the end of the day, there is a jealousy component.
Yep.
It's an efficient city.
Yeah.
It's a working city that actually works. I mean, not like people. Well, obviously people. And it is pretty. I mean, it's not the ugliest thing in the world. Let's be honest. It doesn't look like Bree Street that we have up here. Same size mountains, but
it's all quite pretty down there, especially this time of year. The DA does a great job in making sure it's ready for the tourists.
There's
always the nice new painted lines and there's new walkways that have been recently
paved.
That's
important, though.
Yeah,
and they've budgeted for it. That's the
point. It's wonderful to see a government and municipality that works.
100%.
So a little bit jealous that side. I also met with a joint mutual friend of ours, the Sea Monster guys. We went and met with Monkey.
Oh, it was Monkey there.
Monkey was there. Glenn was unfortunately up this side. We missed each other in the air. But we must have those guys on for a conversation around storytelling and engaging content.
I think with them and the guys from Brain Truth as well, that could be quite an interesting thing. Find our lever with an app design. As long as we get royalties, it's fine.
That's the enablers and the connectors over here.
I don't know if they addressed it down there, but I mean, Facebook and Google are having a whole war at the moment about fake news. I actually didn't even bother to read into it because that kind of stuff just like, meh. But I think the takeaway from it was the fact that people are like selling ads and selling information based on stats and usership. It's that same old, same old. And that's where the controls need to start coming back. So maybe with these guys actually putting a proper touch point here in South Africa, we can start to see, because Google's had support office presence, representation, et cetera, for years. Mm. You know, they said, hey, we're here. We're here to play with you. We're here to work with you. Facebook's kind of been very, if you've got money for us, we're here. If you don't, call Ireland.
I think one of the big things that everybody's come up with is Google's very much open to the world. It's about, it's for the world. Yeah. Everybody must have access to it.
Dum, dum, dum.
Yeah. Facebook, although kind of similar in its approach, it kind of stayed within its own little silo, its own ecosystem that it creates. And while it's only one system that operates in its own space, I'm sure it's got WhatsApp now and Messenger and all these things, but it's a very big one space.
It is.
It's a very big space.
That's the thing. Okay, so totally unrelated to Facebook and Google.
No problem.
I have a smartwatch, as you know. I always wear it.
You have a smart iWatch.
My bugbear with it is its battery, as with anyone. I came across such a cool thing. It's a smartwatch that you don't need to charge.
Yeah. I'm like the Seiko Connect.
No, I do remember that. So it works on sweat. Okay, what? As gross as that sounds, it's a very simplistic watch, but I like where these guys are thinking. So it's a sealed unit, which means it's now waterproof. So it's already half the battle of smartwatches won, because that is a problem. I know the new Apple Watch 2 is now waterproof, and I know there are Android watches that are waterproof, but this is a sealed unit. So 50
it converts
meters.
Sweat into power.
That was how the article is worded, but when you actually read further, it's heat. So your body sweats, it releases heat.
What's
the
it called? Senses,
I don't actually know. It was just like a prototype.
A sweat-powered smartwatch.
But it's very basic. It does like calorie steps, like a pedometer on your wrist. It will do a sleep measurement thing as well, which obviously works with the app.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're starting on that kind of tech now, then in the next year to two, we should see the wearable market really start to boom, because the problem is charging.
Yeah.
That's the problem. You know,
the other problem is exploding batteries.
Well, yeah, we didn't go there, but yes. In fact, Mashable put that on. I think it was Mashable. I had a go at them on Twitter. They posted something about a Samsung phone or whatever, and my response was, I bet it's going to explode into store soon. Or sales are going to explode or something like that, you know? I have to say this, Brett, only because I know it bugs you, and not that I love to bug
Don't
you, but
say it.
What am I going to say?
I'm not even going to say it. I'm hoping you're not going to say it.
Pokemon!
Damn it, bad.
Okay, Pokemon card. So not this crap that they're playing now.
Yeah.
1998.
Yes.
There was you were talking about content in it, so it kind of is relevant.
Yeah.
They had this thing at a Comic-Con or Droid-Con or how's your mom's con, I don't know.
Don't get con.
And they made these cards of what's the main character, the Pikachu.
You're asking me?
No, but it's I'm reading the notes as well. Pikachu Illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
They made 39 of these cards. Apparently there's only 10 left in circulation. This is 1998.
Yep.
One just sold for $70,000 American.
That annoys me
for a card, buddy. These are things that we used to sit there and play with as kids.
Not me.
Know, the entertainment.
I didn't play it then. We were in high school, Brett. Please tell me you didn't play Pokemon.
No, I'm talking about cards, though. Trumps or
cards.
Whatever.
Yeah,
you never bought a card thinking one day this is going to be worth a gazillion, billion, million dollars. So
that is bizarre.
But $70,000 for a card.
Guys, you got better things to spend your money on.
Well, actually, I watched that last night. On porn
like
stars.
Your replacement Samsung phone.
And he goes there again, zing. You know the series Porn Stars, like
AWN,
okay, the Vegas one. So this guy walks in with this like little toy, you know, like still sealed in its box and all that. It's a Star Wars toy.
Oh yeah.
We're talking about the office. Like Tommy, now I can't remember. It's like Jubu Fett or something. He's some hitman.
Boba Fett.
Yeah, him. Yeah. See, how does everyone know this shit?
He's the bounty hunter from Star Wars.
Okay. Yes. So he walks in with a Boba Fett toy.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, an action figurine this big, what I'm showing my hands, 15 centimeters, right?
I'm a terrible gauge of.
1978 in New York, there was a toy fair where they're going to launch this Boba Fett toy. So that, you know, like all the buyers come in that. And this dude carries like this missile thing on his back. And you could push a button and it launched. And they realized that this could be a choking hazard. So when the toys came out, it was sealed. You know, it's there on his back, the missile, but it doesn't do anything. It's just a figurine. This is that prototype from that show. So this guy walks in and he goes, I'm here to sell my Boba Fett, one-of-a-kind prototype, blah, 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 blah. I want $150,000 and I'm not negotiable. So, of course, let me phone an expert. And the expert walks in, he's walking towards the desk and he can see what this is. Mm. He's like, yeah, that's worth $125,000. Like, boom, off the bat.
Yeah.
You know. Now, that toy probably sold for $1, the actual final
back
product.
Then, yeah.
It's 1978. That specific one, if you think about it, maybe $50. You know, it's a prototype. Yeah. It's a collector's item.
1978?
Yeah. It's not that long ago. I mean, it's like just under 40 years.
Yeah.
From $100 or $50, call it $1,000 to $150,000. So it just shows there are toys out there that are not toys. I mean, like this card. that one specific card.
Yeah.
These oaks paid 70
the
grand.
The future of value.
It's, yeah.
That'll be another show.
There's another show.
But value over time. Back-to-back shows.
Now I'm going to get a bit macabre. Okay. I'm going to go.
You have already spoken about the death clock. So we're kind of there
this
already.
This is actually worse than that.
Oh, great.
So I'm going to go from London to America, but in a heartbeat. There was a 14-year-old girl this last week who had this really rare cancer.
Yeah.
And she won a high court application to have herself frozen against her parents' wishes. So she was going to die. Okay.
Okay.
And she petitioned the court. She basically said that she's too young to die. She hasn't lived. And she doesn't mind if they freeze her for even 100 years.
But have they got this right? I mean, reanimating people from cryogenically frozen states. Have they got it right
yet? No, they haven't. Well, Disney's still cryogenically frozen, apparently.
He's just next to the peas in the freezer.
Okay. So she won her case, right? But what was fascinating about this, and this is I'm talking about futurology. I mean, this is futurology 101.
Yeah.
You're a parent. I'm a parent. Our waking moments is to ensure that the well-being and longevity of our children and happiness. Okay. So she basically, the judge said, you need to write me a letter. So she wrote a letter, and they had extracts, and they can't tell us who she is for obvious reasons and that. But she basically said, I have this disease that's going to kill me, and I know I'm going to die, but I'm not ready to die because I haven't lived, and I want to live. Mm. And I don't mind that even if they bring me back 100 years from now, and
if
I don't know if, and I don't know anyone, I will still get a chance to live. And I thought about that, and I thought, you know what? It's not a bad thing. It's her choice. But if nothing else.
At 14.
But hold on a second.
It's not her choice.
She dies with a comforting thought in her mind, which is quite a big win. She dies knowing that she's won her battle and potentially she could come back, okay? But here's where it gets interesting was the science behind it. They literally had the team there, like standing outside. Okay, you picture the vulture scenes. And they have to get her body down to minus 196 degrees within minutes so that the blood can't clot, so it can't cause a brain hemorrhage when they do reanimate or if they do reanimate, okay? But they showed, again, they can't tell you who this little girl is and they can't tell you it, but they can show the procedure. And then how it gets into a capsule and then it gets transported and then lives in a liquid state, blah, 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 blah. It's apparently somewhere in Michigan because it's not allowed in the UK yet.
Yeah.
But how's that for like, I mean, as I said, I'm talking about That's futuristic crazy. Thing. But now what happens? So I posed a question. I came home and like everyone's like, are you nuts? I'm in my early 40s. So I've lived a really good life. I'm still healthy. I'm still strong. I'm still active, blah, blah, blah. If I, and I mean I as in not me as me now, I'm talking purely a hypothetical because I am married and I do have a kid. But if I wasn't married and if I didn't have a kid and if I didn't have any form of emotional tie, in other words, parents, brothers, sisters, reasons to be here. I'm not talking about the fact that living is awesome. I'm talking about reasons. If you could guarantee me that you could bring me back, okay? So now here where I'm going, I might consider that. Consider it a journey. Like people are going to hop asleep to go to Jupiter or Mars or whatever. So freeze me. Excuse me. Bring me back in 100 years. Or actually, no, make it 150 because I'd like to see into another century. Come back. I'm still young enough, strong enough, active enough
you
to be able
a year
to enjoy.
Every decade.
But that's what I'm saying. So you could come back 100 years into the future and live future. Like, you know, we've always said, oh, I wonder when they're going to get the Hyperloop. I wonder if we'll ever get time travel right. Now you'll know. And if you came back in 150 years and things were still, nothing, mate, go back to sleep again. So you have this perpetual journey that you could actually start. Now, again, I've got to take religion off. I've got to take morals off the table. I've got to take everything. I'm putting a pure hypothetical. I just thought it was quite a.
So in some Amazonian tribes.
There we go.
Yes, in some Amazonian tribes, the elders are the only people that hold information. So, like, if they die, it's the equivalent of, like, a library burning down.
Okay, so there we go.
Or, like, Google crashing
so
completely.
So they could come back.
So, like, these people would become, like, the best level of perspective humanity's ever had.
And they've experienced every single century.
Sucks for us right now because we're the starting point. But, you know.
But it's a thought because this topic opens those type of thinking. You know the quantum physicists will look at it.
But you wake up a millennia from now and all of a sudden everybody's got a third arm and you're like, damn it. I spent all this time sleeping.
Check the freak.
or
you come back like the Wally slab, but you're now athletic and fun. You can't.
So here's the idea. Either you got to automate, you got to have like a microwave timer that wakes you up. So you got to hope that microwave timer doesn't trip because the power load shedding in South Africa. So don't do it here.
No.
But you've also got to, like, eventually it might catch on. Eventually everybody's frozen.
Yes.
So you're going to have to do the schedule thing where some people are awake and unfrozen. So the thawed humans have to be responsible for unthawing the frozen humans.
Okay, now we're getting too complex. And then who has sex and who procreates and who doesn't? Because but your wife is actually 7,000 years old, but she's actually only 20. So, yeah, okay.
A meteor hits the planet and only the thawed people die and all the frozen people are eternally frozen.
And then they're stupid because they haven't got any knowledge. Okay.
Well, there's no one.
Okay, well, it's a thought provoker. It did keep me
up. It is, but now
you see. You'll be sending me messages tonight.
Yeah, I was hoping for a relaxing December.
Okay, well, I'm going to get that mind of yours going. So, we do have a guest today.
Yes.
I'm actually going to just go out to a break, and then we're going to come back and introduce him. But, yeah, how's that for a thought provoker before we actually go off?
And
this is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to the Futurology Show. Hashtag Futurology. Hello, Brett.
Hey, Brett.
Hey. I'm just saying it again, Doug, because we're talking about the future, reanimating. Yeah.
No, my brain is still whirling from time-traveling frozen people.
So I said before we went off for the break that we've got a guest in tape, but I've just got one more little pearl here that I actually didn't chat about, and I know you'll dig this because we always talk about VR.
Yeah.
But Google did Google Earth and VR launch this week.
Ah.
Yeah. Okay. The only thing I'm pissed off about, it's like only with
HTC. So Street View.
No, like Google Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
But you go in VR and you go down and walk. But yeah, like a Street View, but from POV. Like really with proper VR. But like they've done the whole HTC.
If you have vertigo, don't do it.
Then I think you'll fall over. But the whole, what do you call it? The HTC Vive. And I'm like, guys, you built freaking Daydream. You did Cardboard.
Mm.
Why would you want to take your knees out and go straight to HTC Vive, which is probably like, that percentage of the market, he says, with
let somebody else fail if it doesn't work.
Yeah, anyway, but the nice thing is
that
they've
is
done
cool.
it.
That's a good sort of context, I suppose, for VR.
Yeah. No, and they've done it.
Yeah, nice.
Anyway, so as I said, we got a guest today. We have Rashad Shah, correct? Okay. From, I don't know, you got multiple. It's Dark Fiber Africa, Sigvox, Squidnet. You tell us. I don't know. Where are you from?
Great. Hi, Brett. So I'm the Chief Strategy Officer at DFA, which is a fiber network operator, primarily connecting fiber points across South Africa.
And we love you for it and your company.
There are extra manholes with your logos all over them.
That's
nice.
Right. And in addition to that, as of this week, I'm the CEO of Squidnet.
Congratulations.
Squidnet, thank you. Squidnet is a IoT network operator that we announced last week. And the objective of Squidnet is to build out a listening post network that will traverse the entire country, listening for messages coming from objects or things. So, you know, if we understand what the Internet of Things is all about.
Thinternet.
We love Internet of Things.
Yes.
We were quite privileged to be involved with the Gartner Symposium, and one of the innovators was IoT.next. I don't know if you've engaged with these guys at all. Or
not as yet, but we're looking forward to engaging with all of the ecosystem partners.
Awesome. Yeah, well, these guys are, I mean, from a South African play, you want to speak to these guys.
We've so definitely, to quite a few of them,
we'll give you the contact details and reach out to Nico, their CEO. He's fantastic.
Great.
We actually had him on the show. Now, what is interesting for me is, and we were actually talking about it earlier, like 4 years ago, Brett was standing up on a stage talking about the mobile being the main screen and content being delivered and don't worry about TV. And everyone's like, are you crazy?
So when you say Brett, you're meaning yourself Brett. Or the other?
This okay. Brett.
He doesn't talk to himself about himself in the third person.
Okay,
so it's just very weird.
100%. So when I say Brett, I'm obviously talking about him.
Okay. The internet of Brett.
What's that dude from Smeagol? Smeagol's my precious. It's me.
We're actually the same people.
But when you talk Brett, you need to be B1 or B2 because we don't know who you're talking. I'll just say Brett because we kind of are a bit split. So what I was saying is like, he was talking about tech and innovation and futurism, hence futurology, and I thought he was mad. I was in Barcelona last year, 2015, at Mobile World Congress, and there was a very, very small little stand there on a company called Sigvox. And you're nodding your head because I'm leading into that. And Sigvox had this Internet of Things device that would let you send messages over networks, but without needing networks because the machines went. I was like, dude, what? And I actually brought one of these little devices back because one day I knew it was going to turn on. You've just brought Sigvox. That's the announcement. You're bringing them to Africa, or South Africa.
That's correct. We'll be building a network to cover 85% of South Africa's population. And that would enable those devices, like the one that you played with, to come alive and start working. So it's really about connecting the physical world to the digital virtual world. And that's what Internet of Things is all about.
All right. So I want you to explain that, because Sigfox, by my understanding, is French. They're a French company. And the guy on the stand was French, and we were in Spain. So you can imagine where I'm going with this. Between parlez-vous en français and no hablo español, I kind of didn't really get – that was not bad, huh? Do you want me to do it again?
I know lots of languages. I can count to 10 in all of them.
I think that's one of my wife's tricks as well. So I can swear in Italian.
Yeah.
So basically, I didn't get the full picture, but I think more importantly, the world wasn't ready for it. It was kind of like next level. I mean, let's be honest, IoT is only really broken this year. It's become massive this year. Take us through what this journey is, and obviously the importance of Dark Fiber Africa, DFA, being the partner that's actually going to enable it, through to what this network looks like. Because again, you know, they were talking about this network running off cell towers, and I'm like, okay, but I have a cell phone. They're like, no, but you don't need a SIM card. I just really didn't follow the journey. So I'm so excited that we're one of the first interviews, I'm assuming, on this, which is great. So
yes. It's
always nice to be first for the future. But two, people are battling with this stuff. It's like, it's really is next level. So take us through how these components come together to connect the connected to the non-connected.
Okay. So I think the important aspect to understand about Internet of Things, it's really about how do you connect items that are in the physical world into this virtual world, and what does it take to connect those things to this world? And also to understand why would you want them connected. So if we just go back to the definition of IoT itself, it's really about the internetworking of a device or an object of some kind with some network connectivity on top of it, some processing power potentially in that device, and some kind of a sensor or actuator that allows you to sense something. So if you think of an object of some kind, so like the one you played with, that was a vibration sensor, it was a door opening sensor, it was a light sensor, it was a temperature sensor.
Yeah,
it was
you're
a
right.
Couple of things.
It had about that. So just for the listeners, because, I mean, even Brett hasn't seen it. It was a little, it looked like almost an egg-shaped thing, and it was probably about the size of a remote control. They had them on lanyards. And there were different color LEDs, Brett. There was a green, blue, red, and you clicked a button, and it activated, right? And then you clicked a button again and went another color. And exactly what you're saying, you could program this thing to open a door or make a phone call. And the one thing I did understand was, like, for the elderly, if they fell down, the gyrometer inside would picture movement displacement at speed and automatically send a message to whatever that programming was. And that's kind of the gist of what I got on this.
That's exactly it. And that device you played with was a demo device that, just to give you a sense of the type
of sensors.
Is it
worth money? Shall I hold on to it?
You'll be able to use it as your home alarm system very soon, actually.
So that's the one thing I have movement. With development and innovation, we talk about a lot, is it's context. We have a lot of the things already. These smart devices are everywhere. Yep. What we don't have is the context. So we've got a goldfish in a bowl. We don't have any water. The way I like to think of it is that Sigfox are going to provide this context, this network, this connected reason for having all these things.
Yes, and that network is a SquidNet network. That's the company we launched in South Africa. It's built on the Sigfox technology.
Yep.
So Sigfox is the exclusive technology provider to us.
Brilliant.
To enable us to roll out this network. And the network is basically, if you think of it, it's base stations that are listening posts.
Right.
That will be out there listening for messages coming from various objects. And those objects could be anything from a little tag that's stuck onto a high-value piece of equipment in a hospital ward that has a geofence around it that says this little device or this machinery is only allowed to move in this floor, in this ward. And if it moves out of that space, it could trigger an alarm of some kind. So it's really about how do I manage, operate, track, sense various objects for a specific purpose. Mm-hmm. So it has to have a purpose. So you could be tracking it from a security perspective. You could be tracking it from a usage perspective. You could be tracking something as simple as an acoustic signal coming, taking place at an ATM where somebody starts up an angle grinder about to cut through something. You could trigger an alert that says, I think something's about to happen here. Let me trigger something. whether it's a security service or some other form of
intervention.
But
you've enabled all those types of thinking.
And that's what the enablement is all about. And if you think about security cameras that are out there today, the camera can't really stop anybody from doing anything.
No.
But what it's able to do is capture the recording of what happened.
Yeah.
Now, what you want to move into the world of saying, how do I do something proactively while something's happening? And that's where you can bring these two together.
So you got a whole artificial intelligence play there as well, that obviously there's going to be behavioral patterns that will be mimicked or pre-loaded into some form of AI bank, that if this, then that. So if you see that, then do that, you know?
Yeah, and you'll do local processing of some kind. So you might program the device to take some action locally. Mm-hmm. You might say, okay, I want the stream of data to go into the cloud. And collection of this data, which is again here now, feeding the big data story around that. How do I analyze this large volumes of data that I'm collecting from millions, hundreds of millions, if not billions of sensors around the world doing various things?
So there might be a situation now where we know that certain data is worth recording. We're just going to record it. We might not necessarily have a plan of how we're going to interpret it yet, but we're going to record it and
Absolutely.
Then put it somewhere. But yeah. Go back over time and say, right, 25 years later, we can actually tell you that the amount of farm gates that swing every day in KwaZulu-Natal produce so much noise that we can, you know, we're slowing the world down. Who knows what it is? But the thing is, we're not measuring anything, so we can't monitor it, so we can't approve anything. Is that sort of how Internet of Things is going to change the world?
Absolutely, it's going to change the world. And you know, that point you made there about collection of the data, we don't know what we're going to do with this data. Let's collect it anyway. It's cheap to collect the data. Storage costs very little with, you know, some of the global providers out there today. You can literally collect this data and analyze it historically to also help you predict what should happen. So if you think of in the industrial world, heavy machinery doing specific tasks, by just monitoring what those machines are doing, you'd be able to quite reliably predict what maintenance requirements they may have in the future.
That's awesome. To be honest, as a proper dweeb, I have a version of heaven in my mind where I have the analytics of everything I've ever done in my life, like everything, like down to how many times I've tied my shoelaces to how many times I've actually blinked, because I think that's fascinating. But
I can think of things that I'd rather remember.
It's just like, can you imagine you go into this room that is just a board of information and you can literally say, I want to know that, and you can know it. Whether or not you need to do something with it is irrelevant. The fact that you can know it, does it kill you a little bit inside that there is information for the last millennia or since 1978 or whatever? Yeah, why not? Let's go there. 1978. But like, is there anything, like if you could have recorded anything, what would you have started with? As a completely random question, but looking to the past to judge what we're going to do in the future may be helpful.
Yeah, I would have recorded thoughts. I would have found a mechanism to, if I were able to record the thoughts that I have on everything that
yes.
I do and
for
operate from an environmental.
Can I be like my grandfather now?
Amazing.
It's good, a pen and paper.
There's not enough paper in the world.
I think that would be the most common answer.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we spend our lives with experiences and memories and all that, but I can't remember it. Yeah, I can. There's certain things I can remember clearly, like standing outside the headmaster's office to get lashed on a Monday morning. That one I can't get rid of, but I can't remember the other things that are probably a lot cooler than that.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing for me with the current setup, and probably that's maybe what's made it finally happen here, is you've got a three-way party here. You've got DFA, which is obviously the network.
Infrastructure. Nice.
Yeah, so this company, Squidnet, is a subsidiary of DFA, so it's 100% owned by DFA. DFA provides fiber connectivity to anything and everything you want to connect to. So DFA would potentially provide connectivity to us, to our base stations, but we would be able to use whoever we wanted to provide.
Because it was almost like a double-barreled question. I remember when, a year and a half ago, whatever it was, the intimation was that you actually needed a network that was already up and running and all those good things, you know, and you're doing this. That seemed to be the handbrake, but you guys effectively are a network. I mean, you're an enabler. That's what DFA does.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter who you buy your fiber from, that's coming from you or maybe two other players.
Yeah,
you know.
That's it. That's
What is the initial or first opportunities that you guys are going to realize? I mean, you're sitting on a toy box. You could go anywhere you wanted. You just told me that I've got a device whose battery's probably expired already that I could actually reawaken, you know? And I'm going straight back to my office. Now it's in a little silver foil packet. I know exactly where it is. It's got a green lanyard with Sigfox on it, and I'm going to turn it on and see what happens. Well, nothing. It's just going to go bing.
Well, you know, the amazing thing, you touched on an important point there about the battery. And so what the Internet of Things enables is for you to be able to have these devices, these objects deployed in a way that is providing the sensing information but doesn't have to have a physical constraint of this battery life, something that needs to be charged all the time, like the, you know, mobile phones that you have that needs constant charge.
Yeah.
And I think together as Sigfox with SquidNet, what we're enabling is three important aspects to allow Internet of Things to scale at a dramatic level. And those three things are: one is the low consumption, power consumption of the device. The device could be anything from 1 year to 10 years with a single charge. So you would be able to deploy the device in the field and it would last for whatever period you wanted it to based on the use case that you specified. So the first important pillar in this is the low power usage of that specific object that you deploy. The second pillar that supports wide-scale deployment is the cost of the device. Because that little device that you have, you know, if I told you the price of it with five sensors and none at scale, that's like a $10 device, which means that the cost of these objects are so low already that the embedded object cost, the embedded connectivity cost, the embedded capability to connect to the SquidNet network is already $2 for whatever that big machinery that you're producing, or the big device that you're producing, even the GPS tracker, it's already down to $2 and lower without requiring large volumes. So that's the second supporting pillar, meaning if the object is so low cost, you would be able to sell more of it.
Yeah.
People will be able to adopt more of it. A factory floor would be able to deploy hundreds of thousands if the use case is there for them to get some benefit. And then the third part of this whole puzzle is the connectivity cost. So how cheap is the connectivity? I mean, we all know about the various hashtags in South Africa that demand for certain connectivity, price changes, etc.
Or the data must fall thing.
Yeah, something like
that. We're allowed to mention it here, I think.
We're unscripted, uncensored, and anything we want.
So, I mean, there, I think, where we bring a significant benefit to IoT for South Africa is that we're going in a slightly different connectivity charging model. I mean, a fee per annum. You know, we're still busy working out the finer details, which we'll share in the market in the next couple of days. But that fee will be less than per annum will be less than what most machine-to-machine solutions cost per month.
Yeah.
If not cost per week.
So IoT is dealing with bits of information. It's not megabytes.
That's
it's not
it.
Things.
That's it.
Lots of tiny little bits of relevant information when interpreted correctly.
Exactly. And it's complementary to what mobile network operators are doing in South Africa and some of the launches you would have seen at AfricaCom around NB-IoT. NB-IoT, which focuses on some of the higher volume of data and, of course, the SIM-based ones, even higher than that. So we're fitting in right at the bottom end of this, saying that we want to focus on the very small bits of data and use cases that only require a message once every, a maximum every 10 minutes per day. It's still a lot of messages.
But that's great, because
that's really where the focus is.
Is your
for
security
us.
Fence still up and live? You only have to ping it once every three hours.
Is my gate closed?
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. But with all the consumers moving into the 4G, 3G, 4G, 5G spectrum, it's leaving a lot of great space for you guys to play in the IoT space. Is that a benefit?
See that moment of silence there.
Yeah.
Because this is the way I'm thinking.
So well, America, you can't beat the fifth.
I think the world is enabled for there to be high-speed services and for there to be medium and for there to be low ones. And, of course, on the low ones, you're still going to get a much larger adoption of it in terms of volumes. And, I mean, today we are DFA as well. We are at the right, at the top end of this high-speed connectivity platform that we've built and operate. And here we're going in at the really low end from a bits perspective. It's really about how does that volume of devices, how does it impact on a citizen's life, how does it impact on a business, on an industry, to bring specific benefits, whether it's a cost improvement or whether it's a value enhancing capability. You have both, and the Internet of Things is what enables that.
I think my question there is you know, a lot of companies in South Africa get it wrong. They try and be everything to everyone. They try and be the supplier as well as the customer, as well as the reseller, as well as the distributor. And we see that. We see that a lot, you know, and it's problematic. Let's go back to my simple device or any device that I create, because quite honestly, that's what IoT is all about. I can get my own sensors and I can use your network. So I don't need to engage with you for the programming side of it. I need to engage with you for the traffic side of it. So you were saying, like, you know, your costs could probably be as – your annual cost could be as low as someone's monthly cost, which is really exciting. I now have built – a device, whatever that device is, it is, it's got an IoT ready sensor. What happens there? Do I contact you guys and you give me a pathway? Yeah. Is there a gateway that I have to log into to create instructions? That little device that I've got, it's going to do something. Yeah. Someone made it do something.
So, I mean, that's a great question, because you're actually asking, how does this whole ecosystem come together in South Africa, and how, what is the role we'll be playing in that? So the role we're going to be playing is the connectivity provider that will act as an enablement platform. So for device manufacturers, guys that want to make devices, program stuff, by default, we'll give them free access to our network. If they're developing a product, Sigfox embedded connectivity, they have free access to our network.
Oh, that's quite cool.
The programming code that they need to make it work on the Sigfox network is also available from Sigfox, royalty free. So it's to invigorate that ecosystem to get more people making more products and devices today. So that's the first important aspect.
Okay.
The second aspect is, if you're making a device, there might be software providers that want to do something with the device. So it might be the same company that says, I'm making this device to do X, Y, and Z, to produce this stream of data and to track something and provide an app that goes onto your phone to know where your pet is, as an example, right? So that's a little device plus an application. The role we'll play there is that actually we'll give those providers access to the network to go develop whatever applications and products that they want to do and take it to market themselves or through our channel partners. Now, we will not be selling straight to consumers. We'll just be acting as the connectivity provider in between that device manufacturers, software providers, users, and then, of course, the people that sell it into businesses and consumers will come together.
Okay, because, I mean, we also, Brett, we're at the top of the hour already. I can't believe it. But the question I wanted to ask, when you talk about putting the Sigfox code or the Sigfox tech into it, do you require some form of SIM card? Do you require some form? Because that's the holy grail. You know, I've done stuff before where you'll put a Raspberry Pi into something, and you send a signal via the internet, and the Raspberry Pi does the work. But the Raspberry Pi can't work unless I've put a dongle in with a SIM card to give it connectivity.
No SIM card required. This is embedded code in a sub-gigahertz module that's embedded in that.
How awesome is that?
Shut your dirty mouth. That doesn't even exist.
This is what I'm trying to tell you. I saw this stuff.
There's voodoo magic happening here.
So basically, no Fika, no Rika, no Ika, and don't worry about any of the big four colors. You don't have to give them any money, but you can make your devices play and talk to each other.
Absolutely.
The internet without the internet.
Is the IoT, is it one? It's one-way communication then? From device into our collecting
point. You can have two-way communication.
No,
can
we
have
two-way communication? Yeah. This little thing you push a button.
So you can actually create actuator-based engagement.
Yeah. It's ridiculous, huh? I know. I saw this like over a year ago, and I was like, what?
I'll free up some energy for the end of the year to make sure we can keep tackling some new solutions. Nice.
So watch the space. Squidnet has launched, and we'll be rolling out that network.
Well, that was my last question. So you've launched. Do you have anything in the market at the moment? Is there a company that's doing something that we could follow or see, or you're not allowed to talk about that yet?
I mean, there's over 300 devices already available globally that could be used in the market in South Africa that will work in South African use cases. The focus initially is to build out the network itself and to get the footprint. As I said, we want to cover 85% of the population. So we went, we have two sites live already, and we'll start rolling that out at a rapid rate. We expect to have the entire network built within the next 18 months or so.
Sure. Okay.
And, but having said that, because of the type of network it is, you know, if we just connect Johannesburg, if we put up a couple of base stations, Johannesburg would be live on the network. So for stuff that needs to be connected here, it would be able to be used immediately.
So if people are listening to the show and they want to get hold of you, what's the best way?
Twitter, Instagram, and the website, okay, squidnet.com.
We've retweeted a lot of those ad handles.
Those handles are there.
So check it out. Otherwise, it's sigfox.com.
Squidnet.com.
Squidnet. Okay, and that's S-Q-W-I-D.
Yes.
That's my last question before we have to wrap. How did you get that name? If it's a quick answer.
Yeah, it's a quick answer. So actually, a squid is something that has over a billion receptors on it, both eyes, as well as its entire body. So this is really about a sensory network that we're building.
I thought
the name would be appropriate.
No, I like it.
You remember what the front of our kegerator looks like,
hey? Yes. No, there we
it's
go.
It's got a squid on the front, so you need to come around for a beer one day.
Right. So we are going to have to wrap up before I start getting evil hand signs through from the producer's side. Brett, thought for the week?
I'm going to steal.
I've killed your brains now.
Yeah, no, there's lots to think about. But I'm going to steal from the sigfox.com website. And the idea that you guys, there's a thing here that says, we have a dream. Imagine a world where things can communicate with us. The Internet of Things will transform our lives in the next 25 years. Driven by simplicity, we unlock the power of IoT and give life to the physical world. And that's amazing. So if you guys are any dreamers out there, any innovators, any aspiring world changes, you've now got the ability and the access to change things within the context provided by you guys. So I think it's amazing. I think the more we can enable amazing to happen, we'll start seeing it unravel.
Well, there we go. Rashad, we're definitely going to be following this journey, and please stay friends of the station. Give us the updates and let us know what's going on, because we do enjoy IoT. Yeah. So thank you for coming through. We'll retweet all the details again as well. And until next time, keep your screens clean and your knobs shiny. CliffCentral.com.